What is going on? Thanks for tuning in to the MMA Podcast. It's Wednesday, April 25th. This is episode 226. Got a lot to break down. Last week, we had Kevin Lee putting on a performance against Edson Barboza to be remembered, getting rocked, but ultimately winning via TKO. Frankie Edgar also defeating Cub Swanson. Going to talk about that card. A fun little Bellator card coming up this weekend. Fedor Emelianenko taking on Frank Mir. And a few fight announcements to talk about. Joined, as always, by P-Money. Pat, what's going on, man?
Jake, we are just a few seconds into this wonderful Wednesday's episode of the MMA Podcast, and you've already coined a new catchphrase forever to be remembered. For those who are just giant Bellator marks, they will now forever be remembered as Bellatards. Fantastic. I'm so excited based on that, and also looking forward to breaking down the great Glendale action we had this past Saturday, and looking forward to Mir versus Fedor at Bellator. My goodness, what a fight that's going to be.
I know a lot of UFC tards, but yeah, Bellator. I accidentally came up with a word there, but if I do ever meet a huge Bellator, for some reason he loves MMA, but he doesn't love the top level MMA. He likes it a little bit turned down.
He's abstaining from the corporate UFC shenanigans.
You know, I would love to see Bellator. You know, they definitely are trending upwards as far as getting new fighters, putting on better fights. I hear, that brings me into a topic I wasn't even planning on talking about, but we can go ahead and lead with it because that's kind of where things have twisted around. Bellator has Rory McDonald over there, and Ben Askren apparently has been talking on Twitter about a potential fight with Rory McDonald. Bellator is considering putting that on. Would you be interested in a potential matchup between the now retired / free agent / former Bellator champion / undefeated welterweight Ben Askren against maybe the best fighter in Bellator right now, Rory McDonald?
You know what? I would, Jake. And actually, let me start by saying I'm now realizing that Atlantic City was this past weekend's UFC card. I misspoke and said it was some Glendale. That was the Poirier versus Gaethje card. I apologize there. But yeah, as far as Rory McDonald versus Ben Askren at Bellator, personally, I would have loved to seen, and I mean, I guess I should say I would still love to see, because nothing's official at this point. I'd love to see Ben Askren get to the UFC. I mean, he was the champion in Bellator. He was the champion in ONE FC, undefeated in his mixed martial arts career. One of the top all-time on the NCAA Division I pins list, multiple-time D1 champion in the entire nation. I'd love to see him in the UFC. I mean, it's just a natural progression for him to go over to Bellator and try and get his title back. I mean, I guess that would still help with his resume, but still it would always be kind of like the, one of the greatest to never compete in the UFC situation. You know, to end all the questions, he would have to go to the UFC and just, you know, so there isn't any one of those what ifs. But Rory McDonald definitely was one of the top fighters in the 170-pound division in the UFC and in any promotion as well. So, I mean, certainly a tough test for him. And Bellator is gaining some more top competition. So, I mean, heck, just to see Ben Askren back in the U.S. fighting in MMA, fighting on primetime TV again, I would enjoy seeing him getting in there for a scrap with Rory Mac.
Yeah, a few thoughts of my own on that. You mentioned the UFC's release of Rory McDonald back in 2016. Huge head scratcher. You know, the UFC has let a lot of guys go. I think really, as far as talent-wise, Rory McDonald is the one who stands out. I think he was ranked third or fourth in the UFC at the time. Had that fight in my opinion, the greatest fight of all time against Robbie Lawler back that was, what, UFC 189? And going up against a guy like Ben Askren, who, you know, if you blame Ben for not going to the UFC and taking on top talent, then you obviously haven't heard the story that is not refuted by the UFC, that the UFC simply did not want Ben to be signed because Dana thought he was boring, and Dana had a big grudge against him because Ben had said some not so nice things about Dana in the past. Dana likes to hold grudges, and Dana effectively blocked Ben Askren ever from taking on top talent in the UFC. In my opinion, when you talk about the greatest fighters ever who never fought for the UFC, you can talk about different tiers of guys. I think in a class of their own, the two that stand out are Fedor and Ben Askren. And with all the losses that Fedor has now on his record, and the fact that Ben Askren is 18-0, I think, at least in my eyes, it's pretty clear that Ben Askren is the greatest fighter of all time. Two have never fought for the UFC, and everyone always claims, and it is true to some extent, I don't know if it's as true as a lot of his detractors would want you to think. He definitely has defeated impressive opponents. He won a unanimous decision against Douglas Lima the last time he fought in America back in 2013. He TKO'd Andrei Koreshkov and rode him literally like a horse, and I think chanted USA. It was a hell of a performance, but like you said, we haven't seen him in America on primetime TV in almost 5 years. I would love, you know, fighting Rory McDonald would really solve the question of, well, Ben never fought any top-tier talent. That W would kind of shut up the biggest detraction that people like to point at as far as Ben Askren going down as one of the best fighters of all time. And it would, you know, further, I think, legitimize Bellator. As far as title contenders right now at welterweight, especially the fact that Rory McDonald just beat Douglas Lima a few months ago, Ben Askren, I think, is more deserving than any of the other welterweight contenders. So if you can put the fight on, Ben obviously is game. Rory, you know, both fighters have tweeted interest. And apparently, I don't know if it was Scott Coker or the Bellator main account, but they seem like maybe things are in the works. I know Ben just took a job working as the head coach at the University of Wisconsin Badger Regional Training Center, and he does run his own wrestling academy, AWA, Askren Wrestling Academy. So he has his hands full as far as wrestling and coaching and all that. But, you know, the guy does seem interested. So, you know, he knows his own schedule better than anyone else. And if he thinks, you know, he can train for a fight and take on Rory McDonald, that would be, I think, one of the best fights possible outside of the UFC. I would love to see that. We will be talking more Bellator later, for all you Bellatards out there. Bellator 198, I believe, going down this Saturday at the beautiful Allstate Arena in Rosemont, Illinois. I've actually been there. I saw the Chicago Wolves take on, I think, the Grand Rapids. They were like the Falcons or some shit. I was watching some AHL while I lived there for a little while. Beautiful place. Fedor taking on Frank Mir. Going to talk about that card in a little bit, but we're going to move on now to UFC Atlantic City. Start out with the prelims. Tony Martin taking on and defeating Keita Nakamura. Corey Anderson also winning via decision over Patrick Cummins. C.R. Bahadurizada, a beautiful KO, kick to the body, followed up by punches over Luan Chagas, who I believe was a favorite, a up and newcomer there. CR's been in the UFC a while, took a big layoff, and now is coming back, getting in the win column. Ryan LaFleur defeating Alex Garcia via unanimous decision, and the one fight on the prelims. Everyone was talking about Ricky Simon defeating Merab Dvishvali by TKO. Merab, as the fight was ending, you know, doing a bicycle motion with his legs. The fight ends, and he seems to be okay. The question is, was he unconscious? It's not really clear, but because of the fact that he couldn't get up, they ruled it a TKO for Ricky Simon, a technical submission after the fight ended. So the horn ends, he survived, but they still ruled it a TKO. Pat, you and I were actually tweeting about this as the fight happened. What went down in your eyes? You know, the referee, I mean, I think both of us kind of questioned it. I know the referee's know more than we do. I believe it was Mark Goddard who was there reffing it there live, and John McCarthy was watching it and tweeting about it live too. And both of them came to the same conclusion that applying the rules, the correct decision, was a TKO finish after the bell. And maybe, you know, they obviously know more than you and I, but just, you know, it's one of those things that perhaps by the book, it should be a TKO, but just common sense-wise, it doesn't make any sense that he's fine as the fight ends, and then the fight ends, and he survived, but then you're still going to rule it a finish, and the judges' scorecards did come out after that fight, and we found out that Merab would have won that fight via split decision over Ricky Simon, who ended up getting the TKO victory. What did you think about the prelims and especially that controversial decision between Ricky Simon and Merab?
There was some good action on the prelims there. I mean, Corey Anderson really did a fine job against Patrick Cummins, beat him up on the feet, out-wrestled him. It was a great showing for overtime there. C.R. Bahadurzada versus Luan Chagas. That was the most interesting ending to a fight I've ever seen. I'm not saying if you want to see what a fixed fight looks like, go watch that. But I'm certainly not that guy. But God damn, I watched that fight and I'm like, that looked like the weakest kick to the body, not even like where the liver is. And old Luan Chagas just decides to fall over and takes a couple shots to the face. I mean, I don't know. I've never fought in the UFC before, but just watching that one, that was one of the more curious fights I'd ever seen. But anyways, yeah, for me, even more curious than that was Ricky Simon versus Merab Dvalishvili. Yeah, I thought Dvalishvili was winning that fight, albeit a narrow margin. I thought it was 29-28. And I personally did not think that Dvalishvili went out at any time. You know, Ricky Simon ended up in the mount going for like a guillotine choke when Dvalishvili shot for a takedown and kind of spiked himself, or, you know, ended up getting spiked as he went for this takedown. He hit very hard, and he basically knocked himself out right there. But he was in the fight. He was doing the bicycle leg motion, which, you know, usually for me, when I'm watching the fights and someone gets technically submitted and they lose consciousness, they're not doing like a bicycle kicking motion. Usually it's like a spasm or like a seizuring, not this what to me appeared to be a very deliberate bicycle kicking motion. And I watched that from the takedown occurs like with 1 minute left in the third round, maybe like 1:15, something like that. And almost the entire time from maybe, I mean, if you watch the last 30 seconds of that fight, Dvalishvili is doing the bicycle kick motion, what appears to me completely uninterrupted for any period of time. I don't know what people are talking about when they're saying, oh, he went out, this, that, and the other. As far as Mark Goddard and Big John McCarthy, absolutely two of the best referees in the game. But I want to say even Big John McCarthy said that that should not have been a TKO. I want to say he had tweeted that that should have been more a technical submission. I would have to go back and go through the Twitter, but I want to say there was a slight discrepancy there, but ultimately Big John did appear to be backing up Mark Goddard in that one. I just simply do not agree in any respect whatsoever. I don't feel that I saw any point that he ever lost consciousness. Dvalishvili was going to a defense very early where he basically stopped moving his arms. If you watch again with 30, 40 seconds left, he basically stops moving his arm. The ref goes to touch his arm to, you know, almost like WWE style, you know, give him a hand raise and see if he's conscious or not. He gives the thumbs up, goes back to an arms down, just bicycle kicking defense. Theoretically just keeping the blood flowing. Who knows? I'm not familiar with that type of defense myself. But anyhow, I didn't see anything that indicated that he had lost consciousness at any point. So I don't know why it didn't go to the scorecards. He looked like he was very exhausted and out of breath. Again, he rocked himself or, you know, got rocked going for the takedown. And then, he was very close to being submitted, but did not get submitted. Attempts to get up almost as soon as the match is over and the horn sounds, he tries getting up. The referee and the doctors, like, basically push him back on the mat to check him out. So, if you look at, was it Sugar Sean MMA in his last fight? I use his full Twitter handle just in case anyone's wondering where to tweet at him. Sugar Sean, he was on the ground the entire time. He hurt his leg so bad in the third round of his fight, a fight he was winning as well. And he somehow, due to his opponent's, some would say due to his opponent's lack of fight IQ, kept it on the ground. Anyways, Sean survives, does his entire post-fight speech like he never gets up from off the mat the entire time. The fight was not ruled a TKO at that point, even though, you know, our boy Dvalishvili was attempting to get up much sooner, but the referees wouldn't let him. So the whole, he couldn't rise to the mat after the contest, I don't buy that whatsoever, because he was attempting to, and the medical staff decided to put him on his back so they could attend to him. And Sugar Sean was given his decision when left leg completely on his back the entire time. So, I'm pretty flabbergasted with that whole result and how things played out.
Yeah, and I think there's for sure a difference between, they applied the rules correctly, but maybe those rules need to be looked at, because common sense-wise, you know, we saw a similar thing in football with a catch. You know, it looked like common sense, it should have been ruled a catch, but by the exact wording and application of the rule, it shouldn't be. Maybe this just comes down to rules needing to be modified. Because it appeared to me that Merab kind of got jobbed there. We will move on, though, to the main card. We'll save the co-main and main for their own topics like we usually do. Dan Hooker defeating Jim Miller first round. I think like most thought he would. Hooker was a big favorite there in Vegas. Miller, you know, for sure a UFC legend, potentially a UFC Hall of Famer, but we are for sure kind of seeing the last appearances of him in the UFC. Aljamain Sterling taking on Brett Johns. This was a really tough matchup, but Sterling looked great, winning the unanimous decision across the board, 30-27. David Branch versus Thiago Santos. This was another one I was not really sure about. David Branch had that really impressive run in the UFC or in the World Series of Fighting. He, Gaethje, and Moraes are really the three guys that stand out from that organization coming over here and have shown that talent. Defeating a vet in Thiago Santos and doing so impressively in the first round. And Justin Willis defeating Chase Sherman 29-28 across the board. Willis now making his debut at the UFC rank, on the UFC rankings, number 15. And it's a nice, you know, we're starting to see that first phase of that, you know, of that super old heavyweight division, some fighters starting to retire, and now we're seeing some new names, going down the list. We see Curtis Blaydes at 4, Marcin Tybura at 8, of course, Derek Lewis at 6, Alexei Olenek at 10, and 12 through 15, we got Tai Tuivasa, Shamil Abdurakhimov, Junior Albini, and Justin Willis. So it's nice seeing fresh faces in what was a heavyweight division that never really seemed to shift around much. You know, everyone kind of knew their pecking order. A lot of guys, 40 or about to be 40, are damn near 50. And it's nice for sure seeing some young talent injected there in the heavyweight division. Pat, what did you make of those first four fights on that Fox Sports 1 main card?
Oh my goodness, it was a roller coaster of emotions for me. Mostly in the opening fight for the main card, Dan Hooker versus Jim Miller. Great finish by Dan Hooker. Fantastic knee to knock out Jim Miller. But damn it, Jim Miller is just one of my favorite fighters. He has been for quite some time. He was in Jersey, which I want to say, you know, fighting in his home state. I was really really hoping for him to get the W. You know, he's been in some wars over the years, and I don't know if the road miles are just starting to show. But man, I was hoping he would be able to get it done against Hooker in AC, but unfortunately, it didn't go his way. Good highlight for Dan Hooker. Good showing there. Aljamain Sterling getting back into the win column. Great showing against a super tough Brett Johns. Great fight for Aljo to rebound there. David Branch getting the TKO over Thiago Santos. Very unexpected. I think most of us, you know, when we think David Branch, don't necessarily immediately associate him with being a knockout artist. And, man, he knocked out the knockout artist in a fairly short order, right at the halfway point through the first round. Some good hands there. Put Thiago Santos down. Thiago gave him a little tip of the cap after the fight. Fine showing there for David Branch. His only loss since coming back to the UFC being to Luke Rockhold. Certainly not a lot of shame in that one, but 2-1 as it stands right now in his current UFC campaign. And Justin Willis versus Chase Sherman. I'm not gonna lie, left me a little nonplussed. You know, usually when the heavyweights go 15 minutes, it's not the most exciting affair, at least for me personally. I didn't feel that it was with Willis versus Sherman. You know, Willis had a lot of power. He was carrying a lot of weight that would generate a lot of power like that. So, I don't know. Chase Sherman was attempting to fight his fight, but just wasn't able to get it done. It was a back and forth of underwhelming proportions, I thought, in Willis versus Sherman. But you know, good to see some new blood in the heavyweight division, as you said, Jake. I would like to see a little more action in that one, though.
And we get to the co-main, and Frankie Edgar just goes out there and does what Frankie Edgar fucking does, coming off a KO, a brutal uppercut KO loss just, I think, 6 weeks prior to Brian Ortega. Frankie Edgar goes out there against a tough-ass fighter in Cub Swanson and works him. Frankie Edgar is an absolute gamer. We've seen his wrestling before. We've seen his stand-up. We saw a mix of that in this fight, although I'd say we mostly saw just that crisp boxing, that footwork that, you know, made Cub miss over and over. Cub definitely did land his punches. Frankie was bleeding a bit there, you know, in the second and third round. But the judges saw it 30-27 across the board, as I did as well. You know, I actually bet a couple bucks on Frankie Edgar by submission. He was 10-1 by submission. He won the first fight by submission. Like, I was shocked that the line was so wild for a result that actually happened the first time that they fought. But Frankie, I think, did what most expected him to do and outwork Cub. I think he was the favorite there. And most expected him to win it by decision, which he did. 30-27 across the board. As far as where this puts Frankie in the featherweight division, obviously losing to Brian Ortega via KO. I don't know how close he is to a title shot, but he is currently third. Fourth is Jeremy Stevens, who's going to be taking on Jose Aldo, who sits at second. So he's between those two guys, Ortega being first. Then you have Cub Swanson. I don't know, maybe a fight against Josh Emmett. We've seen Emmett with a big win and now a big loss at featherweight really test his mettle against a guy like Frankie Edgar. Frank went out there gamed. This is one of the greatest fighters in the promotion's history. He for sure is on the back end of his career, but man, what a goddamn warrior.
Yeah, absolutely. Frankie Edgar with a super short notice in this one. I guess being a little hyperbolic there, but I mean, still pretty short notice, maybe what, a month? Just coming off that big KO loss, but getting a chance to fight in front of his hometown or his home city. I just keep getting this wrong. His home state of New Jersey. Jesus Christ. Two big pass. Cub Swanson, upper round top contenders, really hovering in the top five. It's a tough credit. Did absolutely mock up Swan for spot. It was a complete big brothering. And Jake, as you mentioned, that one ended in a submission for Frank Edgar in this one. I felt like this fight was a little bit closer. Definitely Cub Swanson got the hands going a little bit there, definitely landed his. But this was definitely advantage Frankie, but not quite the blowout it was the first time. Definitely more closely contested. Solid scrap of a co-main event there. Good to see Frankie get that rebound. I was definitely a little concerned there. I thought we could have had a Bisping versus Gastelum situation here. And we could see a fighter coming in just a little too quick off of a really hard fight. But it turned off or turned out to pay off well for Frankie Edgar. Got a solid W, great performance. And I feel like since Ortega and Holloway are going to be fighting for the strap next, I mean, he could fight the loser of that fight, or I guess he could just as easily fight the winner of that fight, because, I mean, if that fight is already being made, and you don't want Frankie Edgar to take on the winner of those two, well, who is it going to be? Maybe the winner of Jeremy Stevens versus Jose Aldo? The list isn't that long, so I mean, even with Frankie Edgar's recent loss to Ortega, I think he could find himself back into title contention pretty soon here.
And that brings us to the main event: Kevin Lee against Edson Barboza. I think we both picked Lee here. Lee was the favorite, but not by much. And Lee went out there, didn't just beat Edson; he smoked him and. No one, I don't think, I've seen smoke him this bad, especially with strikes. Just Lee looked absolutely dominant in the first two rounds. I actually scored the first two rounds 10-8. I think that second round was closer to a 10-7 than it was a 10-9. I mean, he was beating the shit out of him. And then the third round, Barboza, throws up kind of a Hail Mary. That spinning back kick, or that spinning heel kick that he caught Terry Edom with and dropped him like a statue. He caught him with it, and man, he put Kevin Lee on roller skates for 3 or 4 seconds. If you look up the GIF, it's kind of hilarious because his knees are wobbling like he has not, like he's being shook around in an earthquake. Absolutely disoriented as fuck, but his ability to get back with it, hold off a swarming Barboza. He did lose that round, but he roared back out in the fourth round, won that that round and continued to beat him up in round five, or about halfway through, the ref stopped the fight to check out Edson Barboza's just gruesome right eye that Lee had been hitting over and over during the fight. They called it halfway through, which I think was a good call. You know, it was obvious, you know, that Edson was going for the Hail Mary strike. He was down on my card. If that fight would have ended right there, I had scored at 49-44, 10-8 Lee, then 10-9 Barboza, then 10-9 Lee. So regardless, Lee was on the way to winning that fight, so I'm glad that they stopped it just for the sake of Edson Barboza's health and, you know, the safety of his eye and all that. The ref, I think it was Peterson, said it was caused by a legal punch, giving Kevin Lee officially the technical knockout victory 2 minutes and 18 seconds into the fifth round. Man, what did you make of the fight? Kevin actually went on the Joe Rogan podcast, I think yesterday, like less than 48 hours after winning, flew back to Vegas where he lives, and then drove to L.A. on like zero sleep. Actually, I would definitely recommend looking that up. It's just look Kevin Lee, Joe Rogan podcast. It was a really great episode, and they talk about, obviously, the fight and a bunch of other things in MMA. But, yeah, Kevin Lee defeating Edson Barboza definitely has some big implications, which I don't want to talk about yet. We'll save that for our next topic as far as what's next for Lee. But what did you make of this fight?
Man, it was a super good showing for Kevin Lee. He just keeps on impressing, keeps on improving. Certainly one of the absolute top prospects at 155 pounds. A damn shame he couldn't make the weight for this. You know, that's the only thing that there's that little asterisk there. He was 157. This was a catch weight, not a lightweight contest. But how much difference would that have made? We could only speculate on that. What did end up happening, Barboza took the catch weight fight. Bless his heart, and man, he took another savage beating for the second fight in a row. This one, I don't even think it's really up for debate. A bit worse than the one he took from Nurmagomedov. Lee was just all over him real early. Lee really didn't want too much of that that stand-up game early. Forced the ground action and just was putting a hurting on him with some savage ground and pound. Good punches, good elbows, really putting some heavy strikes onto Barboza. I want to say there were some exchanges on the feet as well. Jake, as you referenced, he hit Lee with that spinning heel kick, was in the third round there, and it was close to see someone as stanky legged to those proportions. Oh my goodness, the stank was running all through his legs. Just, I do not know how he didn't fall flat on his face, but man, he was able to keep it together, survive the round, and got back on track in rounds four and five. I was very surprised to see the doctors come in and call the TKO due to cuts on that one. I mean, I feel like I can't really remember the last time I've seen it. It's so rare, I feel, these days in MMA to see a doctor called in for the cuts. I feel like it's almost reminds me of a bygone era when doctors would check on cuts and things like that. Nowadays, it just seems like, you know, you can lose as much blood as possible and your eye can swell to the point of, you know, barely being able to open. But everybody just gets a pass these days. So, I mean, I'm never one to say let's not err on the side of fighter safety, but just, you know, the consistency. Let's get it consistent there. So ultimately, yeah, I guess it was good and it was refreshing to see, even though it was stopped in the fifth round, really there was not a whole lot of need for that fight to go any further. Not to say that Edson Barboza could not have won, but, at the point that the fight had gone, it was in the best interest of Barboza to stop it. So, yeah, solid fight, solid showing for Lee. Good stuff.
So right now, the way the lightweight rankings work out, Habib's your champion. Connor's 1. Tony's 2. Eddie 3. Dustin 4. Kevin Lee 5. Edson Barbosa 6. Justin Gaethje 7. Obviously, you can rule out Edson and Justin from the immediate title picture because they're coming off losses. Nate Diaz is 8. Who knows when that guy is going to fight next. So we'll keep it to the top 5. Tony being the only inactive one there at the top 5, which leaves us with the champ Habib, then Connor, then you got Eddie, Dustin, and Kevin Lee. Now they're in the top 5, defeating Edson. As far as I, like, obviously, everything kind of depends on Connor. Habib versus Connor is the fight that they are going to try and make, unquestionably. But when will Connor fight? How much is he going to demand to fight? Those are questions that have yet to be worked out. In my mind, this is, I think, the best way to go about it. Let's make Eddie versus Dustin, and you honestly could put this on the July card, or Dustin might need some time off after Justin. Do it this fall. Let's go ahead and schedule Eddie versus Dustin. We'll call it a number one contendership fight. We'll try and make Habib versus Connor. If Connor isn't taking the fight, if he's, you know, saying he wants to sit out more, he wants to take on Floyd Mayweather in a celebrity golf tournament, who knows? Connor may or may not ever fight in the UFC. Like I said, I think before the Floyd match was even made official, if he ends up fighting Floyd Mayweather, he's going to make so much money that fighting in the UFC for pennies isn't going to financially make any sense for him anymore. So that might mark the end of his UFC career. And I think that's what we might be looking at. He says he's going to fight in the UFC again. We'll see. He just made $100 million fighting Floyd, and I don't think the UFC can afford to pay him 10. At the most, at the very most, I would say he would get paid 15. And that is the top end. And the guy just made 100. So we'll see what goes down with Connor. If Connor doesn't fight, let's see Kevin Lee versus Habib. You know, we can go ahead and schedule Eddie versus Dustin. Let's try and do Habib versus Connor. If that fight is made, then, you know, we can take it from there as far as who's next for Kevin Lee. If I was matchmaker, that's the way I would work things out. Kevin Lee, stylistically, could pose more problems for Habib than maybe anyone else in the division. He really actually is a very technical wrestler. And a lot of the problems that Habib, gives to other fighters, I think those are some of Lee's strengths. So we'll see what goes down. It should be an interesting year. Unfortunately, it seems like Connor kind of has the division at gunpoint, or dolly point, you could say. But, I hope there's no visa issues associated with that whole Dolly incident. If the fight does happen, I would assume it's going to be in America. You know, the UFC was, I think, floating the idea of doing a card in September in Moscow. I don't know if those plans are canceled, but I've heard that there, you know, are perhaps bumps in the road. It's obviously going to be difficult dealing with a country like a Russia or a China to bring an American promotion in and put on a giant event like the UFC would. So if I had to guess, I would say Habib probably fights again in November at Madison Square Garden. And hopefully it's Habib versus Connor. That fight would make buku bucks. If not, I would still be interested in Kevin Lee. I think he, you know, has earned a, you know, I think all of these guys have earned a shot. You know, I guess Habib's team wants to fight Dustin. So if Dustin's, given the shot, I wouldn't be shocked either. We'll see what shakes out. Hopefully it's sooner rather than later. I feel like this division, especially considering the immense amount of talent, has definitely been stalled out, mostly because Conor kind of sat on that belt for 500-plus days. But Khabib is the new champ now, so hopefully that gets things moving again. Pat, what are your thoughts on Kevin Lee and how he equates into that title picture?
Well, Jake, if I'm being honest, and you know me, I'd like to think the listeners have come to know your boy P-Money over the years. I like to be an optimist. I like to look on the bright side of things. But with Khabib holding this belt, I'm not so sure things are going to be getting any more active anytime soon. Khabib has said he is going to be observing Ramadan, as he always does, which is essentially the Muslim equivalent to Lent, I would say. And so that's going to take him out of action for at least a month there. I want to say, or maybe even 40 days. He should be available. I want to say it was by June. But then he wants to take a vacation after that. And so he was looking maybe around November, December to getting back into the cage. You factor that in with Nurmagomedov's history of injuries and inability to make it to fight day. I'm kind of skeptical how this title reign is going to go. Already not liking what I'm hearing, quite honestly. As far as who he should fight next, I mean, it's a tricky one. Dana White has said that they're never going to try rebooking Tony Ferguson versus Nurmagomedov again. Certainly understandable. They tried to do it four times, and it's fallen apart every single time. It is super unfortunate because Tony Ferguson is absolutely the most deserving person right now. He has the biggest win streak, was the interim champion. This injury that took him out of the fight with Nurmagomedov, it's just one of the shittiest things that's happened in some time. So Kevin Lee, I don't think he has done enough to get this fight, to get a title fight. He's on a one-fight winning streak right now, and he missed weight in that fight. So he hasn't done a whole lot. Dustin Poirier, by virtue of just having won two fights and having made weight for both of them, I'd say has put himself in a little bit better of a position for a title shot. I would say Kevin Lee, he could certainly take on Eddie Alvarez if they do put Nurmagomedov up against Dustin Poirier. There's certainly no shortage of people for Kevin Lee to get in there and at least get two fights in a row or something like that going. I feel like they're going to need to anyways, just with Nurmagomedov not planning on fighting any time in the next 6 months at least. So they're going to be needing to make some more fights just to keep this division rolling anyways.
Yeah, I'm hoping that, Khabib's weight issues are over. His nutritionist is Tyler Minton, who we actually spoke to on the Word on the Street podcast back in the day with Coach Jamie Healy and Ramses. And Chael was on an episode right before, or it may have been that same episode. But regardless, Minton obviously showing his clout. He is the nutritionist for not only Khabib, but Max Holloway, which, yes, he was ruled out of that fight because apparently he was having weight cut issues. But apparently he was on track and was fine and was only pulled because the commission just looked at him and said he didn't look fit for a five-round fight. One of the most absurd things I've ever heard. The New York Athletic Commission dropping the ball huge at UFC 223. But I think we got into that enough last week. I'm done with UFC Atlantic City. Let's move on to fight announcements. It seems like really the biggest announcements of the week, a couple fights slated for UFC 226 on July 7th in Las Vegas for International Fight Week. We've been in Vegas for a few of those. I don't think we're going to be at the one this year, but UFC 226 really looking impressive now. We got Francis Ngannou taking on Derek Lewis Ngannou, the number one ranked heavyweight, taking on Lewis, number six. That should be a good main card banger. And we find out our likely co-main event on the card. Obviously, the main event being Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier. And we get another title fight on the card. A title fight we knew was coming down the pipe, but now we have an official date for it. UFC 226, Max Holloway and Brian Ortega. It was rumored that they would fight at this card, and now it's official per Dana White. July 7th, going to be a couple of great title fights. I can't wait for this card, which, you know, we don't need to get into the breakdowns yet, but, man, Lewis is, I don't know what the odds will be right now, but I know Brian Ortega and Daniel Cormier both, I think, sitting around plus 165. I'm feeling the underdog vibes on this card. I don't know, Max should be the favorite. He should win this fight. But there is something special about this Brian Ortega kid. I think he's got a really crazy set of skills and really impressed taking on Frankie Edgar. I can't wait for this fight. What are you thinking so far about this UFC 226 card?
Oh man, I'm very excited. I'm thinking it's looking very good. Derek Lewis versus Ngannou. Should be a fun scrap at heavyweight. Should be fireworks early, or as I like to say, a lot of sweating and heavy breathing. But you know, there's a good little story, some good hype there. Should be fun, and Ortega versus Holloway, two young beasts in the 145-pound division. Man, Ortega definitely the jiu-jitsu ace. Strong skills coming from the ground, and Holloway got all the scraps on the feet you could want. Has just made tremendous strides in his all-around game, but don't call either of these guys specialists because both of them are good all the way around. I mean, we saw Brian Ortega knocking out Frankie Edgar, and we've certainly seen Max Holloway get a submission or two in his day. Both of these guys, big scrappers. And yeah, I could certainly see the underdogs coming through in either of those fights. Brian Ortega, I mean, my goodness, he certainly has a way to win anywhere the fight goes. He's a big 145 pounds too, just not as tall or has as much reach as Max Holloway. I want to say Holloway will have at least a slight height and reach here, but Ortega just solid for 145 pounds. And again, the grappling credentials, the striking, he's definitely a big time threat anywhere. So I could see it happening. And as far as Lewis versus Ngannou, I mean, we saw Ngannou get taken into those deep waters, those grappling waters. I don't know if Lewis has the chops to employ what Miocic did against Ngannou, but, there's certainly a possibility there, especially at heavyweight, you know, up at the 265 pound range. Everybody hits hard. Should be a good scrap there. But yeah, man, this fight card's coming together nicely. A Sun Sal versus Font, Saki versus Roundtree, Medeiros versus Perry. My goodness, there's scraps abound on the 226.
Yeah, that should be a fun international fight week for all who travel to Vegas and everyone who watches it at home. Other bit of news, Kamaru Usman still looking for an opponent after Sergio Ponzinibbio dropped out. According to UFC sources, he's one of the most avoided guys in UFC history, and you really can see why. He's potentially a future champion, starches, folks, and he's not really that high up in the rankings yet. So, you know, thing is, he's probably going to beat you, and if somehow you beat him, he's not really ranked as high as he should be, so you're not going to get the credit that you probably deserve for beating him. It's not a surprise at all that he is being avoided, but hopefully someone will step up and take the fight. I think Kamaru Usman definitely, he deserves to be avoided, if that makes sense. It does not surprise me at all. And that brings us, I guess, to our final topic of the night, Bellator going down this Saturday. A lot of familiar names, Emmanuel Sanchez taking on Sam Cecilia in the co-main event, but really the only fight worth breaking down is that main event, Fedor versus Frank Mir. As far as Vegas sees it, Mir, a minus 145 favorite. And I'm surprised he's not more of a favorite. This is an interesting matchup. Obviously, like I mentioned earlier, Fedor, one of the names that stands out as far as one of the best fighters of all time who never fought for the UFC, taking on a guy who is a UFC lifer. The guy fought in the UFC for the first time in 2001, 17 years ago, and fought for the promotion 27 times. This is actually his first fight outside of the UFC since 2001 when he fought Dan Quinn in IFC. He fought 27 straight fights in the UFC, his last fight being a KO loss to Mark Hunt March 2016. And you look at both guys' records, and one thing is similar. You see a losing streak, then some wins, and then some more losses. This is, both of them obviously on the backside of their careers. Frank took a 4-fight losing streak to Junior Dos Santos, Daniel Cormier, Josh Barnett, and Alistair Overeem. Keep in mind, that is a murderer's row, especially around 2013, 2014. Beats Bigfoot and Todd Duffy, then loses to Andrei Arlovsky and Mark Hunt before eventually leaving the UFC, coming over to Bellator. Fedor obviously lost that big fight to Fabricio Werdum, then to Bigfoot and Dan Henderson, then went off over to Asia and beat Jeff Monson, Satoshi Ishii, Pedro Rizzo, Jaideep Singh, and a win, I guess you can call it, over Fabio Maldonado. Watch that fight for yourself, because that fight was all sort of shenanigans. And then comes over to Bellator and gets knocked out by Matt Mitrione in 74 seconds. So, obviously, both guys coming off not just a loss, but a first-round KO loss. I think this is Mir's fight just because Fedor, I mean, since losing to Werdum, has done nothing but beat bums. At least Mir, you know, had that KO win against Bigfoot, and the folks that Mir lost to were maybe a little bit better. I don't know. Fedor is one of the best of all time, but, you know, we haven't really seen that vaunted Fedor in probably over a decade. It's not like we've really seen Mir do much in the last decade. I don't know. I'm going with Mir. The winner gets Chael Sonnen. And if I was Chael, I would be rooting for Fedor just because he, I think, would be at a bit of a size disadvantage versus Frank Mir. But yeah, this is the quarterfinals. I guess we see the other two we see one quarterfinal matchup in 2 weeks at Bellator 199 when Bader takes on King Mo on May 12th. And then, we'll see how the semifinals work out after that with this Bellator Grand Prix they're doing. What do you make of Fedor versus Frank Mir this Saturday, Bellator 198?
Jake, this is the most excited I've been for a Bellator fight in Lord knows when. I would have loved for this fight to happen 11 years ago, maybe shortly after the Pride acquisition or something like that, when both of these guys were truly in their prime. I mean, Fedor should have honestly been, he should have been in the UFC a decade ago and fighting all this out. But, it's for me, better late than never in this case. These are, two legends from one of the golden eras in mixed martial arts. You know, Frank Mir, the old-school UFC heavyweight champion. Fedor, the old-school Pride heavyweight champion. Both guys legends in the sport, in the heavyweight class. And both well-rounded fighters. Both have what it takes to get it done wherever the fight goes. both certainly in the twilight of their careers. Again, would have loved to see this in their prime, but just to see these guys going at it right now, I think this is a fantastic matchup. Certainly a lot better than some of the fights I've seen Bellator come out with. This is, I don't want to say borderline on the circus fight. I wouldn't say it's quite there yet, but again, definitely a couple guys in their twilight, but just for nostalgia purposes, you know, I can't wait to check this one out and really relive the glory days of the mixed martial arts. And as far as the actual style breakdown, I mean, Jake, you're definitely very spot on there. I mean, quite frankly, Faye has looked to be in trouble ever since his fight in Affliction with Andrei Arlovsky, who was the UFC champion before he left UFC to go to Affliction. And he was putting it on Fedor in that fight. Literally the only moment that Fedor had was when Arlovsky went for some jump flying knee or something, and Fedor landed the Hail Mary and knocked him out of nowhere. It's the same story with him versus Brett Rogers. Brett Rogers was beating him up in Strikeforce 8 to 10 years ago, and Fedor just hit him with that home run punch. Save the night for him again there. I mean, he's definitely been getting by on the skin of his teeth, if he's been getting by at all lately. I mean, again, some could say possibly the same for Frank Mir, but he's definitely been fighting way tougher competition. And this is one, I mean, Frank's going to have the height. He's going to have the reach. He's going to have the size. He's super formidable on the ground. And, you know, he's certainly been making strides in his striking over the last 5 to 10 years. So he's been getting better there. I think I'm with you, Jake. I'd have to lean towards Frank Mir slightly in this one. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Fedor can get it done, though. Both guys, legend of the sport. I'm really torn in this one. I'd love to see Fedor get the W. Love to see Mir get the W. I don't know who the heart wants to win more, but as far as the analytical portion of me, I would say I feel like Frank Mir is probably a better bet in this one at this point in time.
Yeah, I'm going with Vegas too, Frank Mir. If I had to bet, I might put a couple bucks on Mir just because I think he maybe should be a little bit more of a favorite. But, of course, this isn't a betting podcast, and we would never solicit you illegally gambling on anything, nor committing any crime ever. And on that, we appreciate you listening to the show. As always, follow us on Twitter at The MMA Podcast. We're on iTunes. I believe we're also on Stitcher. We're on SoundCloud. Get the links off of our Twitter, again, at The MMA Podcast. Our boy P Money is also on Twitter at Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, any last words before we end the show and send it out to the people?
Well, Jake, it's time to zip it up and zip it out. It's been another wonderful Wednesday. Always love breaking it down with you. You know, the fans that we have, Jake, are just amongst the best. It warms my heart every time I get to interact with the fans, the ones that tell me how much they love our show, and even the ones that tell me I'm a complete bum, I still love them too because it means they're listening, and maybe they'll download again next week. Much love to all the people out there. Much love to you, Jakey, for putting this shindig together. Always a pleasure getting together with you, brother.
Indeed, indeed. Likewise, I do not think we're going to do a show next week just because there's going to be a little lull in the MMA schedule. So catch us in a couple weeks. Definitely some fun things coming down the line. Our boy Chris Lowe, the original host, may be coming back. Do a little guest appearance, run a three-man show. Always love hearing from him. Talk to him. Maybe line up some interviews this summer. I always promise, but we will actually be moving studios here. So once we have the new setup come May, maybe we can actually make that happen. It should be a fun summer for MMA fans. A lot of fun fights coming up May through August. Looking forward to them. Thanks for listening to the show. As always, we appreciate the shit out of you. And we'll see you in a couple weeks. Until then, we gone.